Before we jump in, quick note, we are still accepting applications for the Adventure Grant, and we will be accepting them. We've extended it to allow some folks to finish their application who've reached out until March 1st. So you have until March 1st to apply for our 3 Adventure Grants. Learn more in the show notes. Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason. Today's episode is actually from my other show, Without Compromise. This episode just came out last Friday, but I wanted to play it here because it's so applicable. We talked to Eric Cedeno, who I met, by the way, on a cross-country bike ride back in 2016. He retraces Black history through the form of bicycle travel. He is known as the Bicycle Nomad on Instagram, and honestly, in real life, he is like the Bicycle Nomad. Does some of the coolest trips. He retraced the Underground Railroad. And this experience is going back to 1897 when he is retracing the 25th Infantry Regiment Bicycle Corps, commissioned by the U.S. Army to determine if bicycle travel is feasible to transport troops. And their mission was to bicycle almost 2,000 miles from Missoula, Montana, to St. Louis, Missouri. And this is, like I said, 1897. Bicycles are not where they are today. Roads are not where they are today. And of course, equality wasn't where it was today. This was just a few decades after the Civil War, which we all know slavery was abolished. So these folks are very close to that timeline. Some of them may have been slaves themselves. Some their parents, of course, sibling, you know, family was. So the world's a different place at this time. We've made a lot of progress since. There's obviously still a lot of racism out there, but Eric is bringing these stories to life, giving them new meaning, deeper understanding, finding out who these people are, what their stories are, because of course, with any sort of history, especially Black history, it's lost to time much more quickly. Records weren't very well kept, and these stories take a lot of digging to unearth. So Eric's doing amazing work, and I wanted to also announce something else we're doing. We have, as you may have noticed, rebranded the podcast. There is a new logo to the podcast starting today to celebrate our 8th anniversary. Birthday. Let's just call it a birthday. We started this show back in 2015, and it is 8 years old tomorrow, but to celebrate on today's episode, we're releasing our new branding. We have rebranded. You'll see, you know, across Instagram or your listening app, wherever, the show shows up differently, trying to make it more appealing, giving it a fresh new look, but keeping those colors, keeping that feel of what the show is, the Adventure Sports Podcast. So if you like that, let us know. Leave us a review. Reach out on email, mason@adventuresportspodcast.com. Let us know what you think. We've been working on that for a while, and we're excited for to have such an awesome episode on such a monumental day, our 8th birthday, our 910th episode, and our 3rd rebranding. So thank you so much, everybody who's listened up to this point. Thank you, Eric, for being on the show for this episode. It's a lot of fun to be able to talk about this stuff and to do this stuff and to make this show. So we hope it shows up with a little more boldness, a little more vividness, a little more brightness in your podcast app when you listen, and feel free to share with anyone you know confidently that this show is doing cool stuff. All right, let's go ahead and jump in. All right, folks, welcome to the podcast. Don't know which one you're listening to. Could be Adventure Sports, could be Without Compromise, but nonetheless, Eric Cedeno, welcome to both the shows, actually.
Thank you, Mason. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
Yeah. So where are you coming from?
So I'm in Santa Monica, where I reside right now.
I know that you didn't grow up there. I know you were born in Panama City, Panama, grew up, or at least spent a lot of time in Miami. What did you grow up doing? Did you grow up cycling, or in which of those areas did you spend the most time?
So, yeah, I was born in Panama, and at the age of 14, 15, we moved to Miami. And I lived in Miami pretty much till I went to college. And I went to college in Daytona Beach at Bethune-Cookman University, which is a HBCU. And then after college, moved to Pennsylvania. And that's actually where I fell in love with cycling in Philadelphia. And what happened was that I was getting tickets left and right in Philadelphia because I had to move the vehicles. And I was not used to that in Miami, where you have to move the vehicles because they had to plow or clean the roads, and the roads were narrow. And I just decided I don't need a car, because at that point I had just graduated from college and I was looking to save money. I wanted to figure out, how do I travel with what I'm making? And I decided, well, I have to pay rent and I love to eat, so I couldn't cut those out. And literally, the car was next. And I decided, you know what? I live downtown, I work downtown. If I get a bicycle, I just commute by bicycle. And that's what I did. I decided to give my dad my car. At the time, I had a 92 Corolla.
Ooh.
And yeah, 92 Corolla. And that 92 Corolla was pretty good to me. But I'm so glad that I gave up the car, because I was able to save. I didn't have to pay car note. I didn't have to pay insurance. I didn't have to pay maintenance. And that's when I started saving to travel. And I fell in love with the bike. I'm like, this is pretty cool to move around by bike. And that's what I did for the last, actually, for about 15 years. I didn't have a car until recently. And my wife has a car, but I didn't have a car. And I love living car free. And that's how I fell in love with cycling.
Philly, I did not know that. I didn't know you went to Bethune-Cookman too. I'm from Florida. Cycling here is a little different. You know, it's harder to get into. It's not as easy to do. Let's put it that way. In some of the cities, it's getting better, but definitely not on the same level of like where you are now and some parts of the Northeast for sure. But so with getting into cycling in Pennsylvania, when did it start to turn into not just, you know, as a way to save money, way to commute, but a way to travel and to see the world and to learn? How did that come about?
Yes, so after Philadelphia, I went back to Miami and I started doing triathlons. I grew up as a swimmer and a long distance runner. So now that I picked up the bike, I'm like, oh, I could combine all three sports and all three hobbies that I love. And I was living in Miami Beach and competing in triathlons. And I loved it. I loved it. But one of the things that I didn't like was, after finishing, like working out and training for those triathlons, and after finishing those competition, I'm like, okay, what's next? It was always like, what's next? And you go from a high to a low really fast, meaning like, I train, I got this adrenaline, and all of a sudden I'm done. And then I also got bored of traveling the same routes, because I grew up in Miami and competing in Miami. I got bored of like seeing the same buildings and I wanted to see more. I've always been curious, even as a kid growing up in Panama. I was very curious about seeing the world. And that came from my mom. My mom, she was a traveler, so she took me everywhere around the world. And I wanted to see more. I'm like, I wonder if I could go from Miami to Key West. It was just an idea in my head. And I'm like, I'm just gonna do it. And I went from Miami to Key West and back the next day, literally 155 miles one way, 155 miles the other way. I didn't know much about traveling by bike, but I just wanted to see stuff and I wanted to be on the bike. And I fell in love with it. I love that I went 155 miles on my own power. And the people that I met along the way and the food that I ate along the way, I was like, this is pretty cool. Now, the next time that I did it differently, because I didn't do it in one way. 155 miles, I cut it in half and I enjoyed it better. And it was just a 4-day trip back and forth. And I wanted to see more. And in one of those trips, I decided, I wonder now, because I don't listen to music, I'm only listening to my thoughts, right? And I have all kinds of thoughts. And I wonder, in one of those trips, if I could go from border to border. Now, I didn't know which border, and I didn't know if it's north, south. But at that time, I started researching the Pacific North, the Pacific Coast Highway from Vancouver to Tijuana. And 6 months, 8 months later from that thought, that original thought, I made it happen. And I went up to Canada and I traveled along the Pacific Coast Highway. And man, it was just the most beautiful experience ever. To wake up every morning in a different place, to meet people, to eat different kind of food, it was just, wow. I fell in love with it. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And the following year, I went kind of like what you said in Florida, from my house in Miami Beach, went from there to New York City because I wanted to see the Atlantic coast. And then after that, every year after that, I took 30 days for me to do a tour. For the past 14 years, I've traveled every single state except Alaska. Alaska is the last frontier now for me.
Oh man, hey, I'll cut this part, but my first trip, I found bike touring in college, and I just got the wild hair. School got out, and I flew one way to Alaska. I got a bicycle, and I rode it home here.
Oh, wow.
And I did it in the summer, and dude, it changed my life forever. Changed my life. So,
yeah.
Man, I can't tell you, kindred spirit here with bike touring and the beauty of it.
Yeah.
And just, I feel like it's so underrated. So many people don't even realize how wonderful of a lifestyle it is. But tell me about, when did the combination, I will say, of bicycle travel, touring with storytelling, like history, when did that start to come together? Because to me, such a beautiful way to combine physicality with bringing history to life and learning about the places you're going through. When did you combine these two, I guess, interests of yours?
Yes. So after my first trip, which was beautiful, amazing, but also very physical. I grew up in Miami where it's flat, and now I'm climbing Washington and Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. There's high elevation. So for me, it was very challenging mentally and physically and spiritually. So I wanted to enjoy it, which I did. But when I went into the Atlantic coast, I started traveling through St. Augustine, right? And the history of St. Augustine in Florida. Went into Savannah, Georgia, and the history in Savannah. And into South Carolina and North Carolina, where I learned a lot about Civil War. And then I went into Virginia and to Jamestown. And I'm like, dang, I heard about Jamestown in history books, right? So now I'm reading historical markers, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. Oh, I didn't learn this. And then I go into DC and the history of DC and museums and Delaware and Philadelphia, and I learn about that and Delaware and Philadelphia. I learned some about the Underground Railroad, and I knew some of it because I went to a predominantly Black college, but there was a lot that I didn't learn about. And then I go into New Jersey and some of the history of New Jersey, and then I get into New York, right? So that, to answer your question, sorry, it took a long time to answer that, but that's when I started like, wow, that was so beautiful, where I learned so much about the landscape of this country, but the history of this country, traveling by bike. So I'm like, and I had two subjects that I was in love since I was a kid, all the way up to college. I loved geography and I loved history. And to be able to travel, and I went to college for travel and tourism management. So to be able to travel by bike and learn about the landscape, the geography of this country, and then also the history of this country by bike, I'm like, oh, that's it. Moving forward, I'm just going to travel by bicycle and travel through history on my bike. So I started thinking about what's next. And that's when early in 2014, I said, okay, I'm going to travel from New Orleans to Niagara Falls, and I wanted to travel through the Underground Railroad.
What kind of goals did you have with this expedition? Obviously, maybe hitting historical landmarks or just things that were important to the Underground Railroad. What kind of it sounds like preparation for this was honestly learning the history, first of all, so that you know the places to go to or like the route to take. Two, what was the goal with trying to follow this route or where these events had happened?
Well, for me, it's always been interested to look into the history of mankind, of human beings, and how they find freedom, right? And that history for me is, even though it's a very dark history of this country, I wanted to celebrate the resilience of the freedom seekers, right? For me, it was about how people travel from one place to another just to look for freedom. And I started questioning, why do I want to travel through what we call the Freedom Trail, the Underground Railroad? Am I looking for my own freedom? And I find freedom when I'm on my bike, right? And obviously, I can't compare my freedom with what they were looking for, but freedom is freedom. And I wanted to learn the landscape. I wanted to know the way they travel, right? So I'm traveling by bike, but they travel by foot. They travel by horses. And there's a similarity that I found, because along the way, I could never travel. And you have traveled by bike before, and you know that you're not able to travel by yourself. There's always people that come around to help you to go to the next place that you need to go to, the next town. And that's what happened on the Underground Railroad. There was a system, a network of houses, businesses that help each other for these freedom seekers to go to Canada to find their freedom. So for me, it's always very, very important to not just to ride my bike, but to go to historical sites, to also spend the night at historical places where they stay, which they call them Underground Railroad stations. And I do that. I've actually traveled the Underground Railroad twice, in 2014 and in 2020. I went from New Orleans to Niagara Falls.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
And by bike, there's so much history that you could cover if you were on a motorcycle or in a car. By bike, obviously, you go a little slower and you're able to see more things, but you can't cover, like, I can't go out of the route to go 100 miles or 200 miles to come back to the route. So that's why I keep going back to the Underground Railroad, because there's places that I missed and I'm like, oh, I got to go back next time to those places. And that's why I go back to that route. And but again, to answer your question, it's very important for me, and it's one of my goals and expectations that I put to myself. It's like, not just to ride the bike, but I want to spend the night at Underground Railroad Station, because they spend the night there. I want to see what that feels like. I want to feel that energy. But I also, Mason, understood that these freedom seekers travel at night. And I was like, you know what? I want to feel that fear. I want to feel what it feels to travel in the dark like they did. So several times, 3 or 4 days, in some of those states like Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, I travel at night. In the middle of the night, I will wake up at 10, 11 o'clock at night, and I will just bike through the night and into the morning, just because I wanted to feel the sense of that fear that they felt traveling at night. But again, I engage myself in the historical aspect of the Underground Railroad. But yeah.
And there's something about the lessons you learn when you're going through something physical too, that it makes the lessons unforgettable. You know what I mean? If you were to do the same trip in a car, it would not, I'm not going to say worse experience, or, you know, a less impactful experience, but it's different. When you're putting in the miles yourself and you're putting in the effort yourself, it's almost like it solidifies what you're learning. What did that experience teach you, if you could sum it up?
Well, it taught me about, you know, it's one thing to read it on books, but then when you travel through the same routes that they traveled, you could see the landscape of the country and you could see how resilient these people were to travel in the middle of the night, to travel through swamp waters, to, yeah, it's just the resilience of those people. It's what, you know, sometimes what happened was, there's a song called Follow the Drinking Gourd. Follow the Drinking Gourd was a spiritual song, a slave song that freedom seekers will sing in plantation. Now, Follow the Drinking Gourd was not just a song. It was a GPS for them to escape and to travel into freedom and into Canada. And that's what the route that I chose. There's many routes of the Underground Railroad, but I chose this particular song because it says that you follow the Tennessee River to the Ohio River and the Big Dipper, which takes you into Canada and into freedom. And at night, when I'm camping in the banks of the Tennessee River, the Ohio River, and I don't have any food and I have mosquitoes biting me, all I kept thinking about the resilience of those freedom seekers. You know, I complain about mosquito bites, so I can only complain to myself, right? I'm like, oh man, these mosquito bites, and I ran out of food, and I could just think about what they went through, which is same thing. And it taught me a lot about them.
I imagine a very eye-opening experience on how impactful history can be when you go through a small part of it yourself, retrace these experiences, and in your form, be it through bicycle. The next adventure you did, retracing history, bringing history to the masses and little known stories, making people more aware, was not just a path that was historically significant, but also the bicycle was directly involved. And that's the Bicycle Corps, the Buffalo Soldiers. This is not only a route you could trace. This is a route that actually involved bikes as well. And I want to hear about the story of where this came from, because I had heard little bits about this growing up, getting into bike touring. I had seen the picture of the Bicycle Corps basically posing on in the Yellowstone. Yeah, the geothermal features there. You took it to a whole nother level and started learning about this adventure to retrace it. Tell me about how that came about. How'd you learn about that?
Like I mentioned, I love history. So when I had about four expeditions, and actually after, just before the Underground Railroad. So just before the Underground Railroad, I started thinking, who were the first people that traveled by bicycle, right? And the history of bikepacking and the history of bicycle touring, where did they go and who were they? So I started looking into history of around 1890s. There was a big craze on traveling by bicycle, you know, one person, two people team. And I was fascinated. I was like, man, people were traveling by bike way back in 1890s. Actually, there's a couple people that traveled in 1886 by bicycle. But when I came across the Bicycle Corps, the Buffalo Soldiers, I just became fascinated because as a person of color, I didn't see other people of color traveling by bike. And I'm sure that it happened, but it wasn't documented. And it was the first time I came across documentation of Black men on bicycle going cross country. And I just like, wow. And I wanted to learn more. And how come I didn't learn this before, you know, when I was in school, when I was in college? Like I mentioned, if that was if that was taught to me when I was in high school or in college, I probably would have started traveling by bike way before I started. And I said, I want to learn more about this, right? I wanted to connect with those men. And back in 2014 or 2015, that's when I started going into the rabbit hole, I call it. And I became fascinated. I wanted to learn. You know, one of the things, Mason, what I learned was Lieutenant Moss, who was in charge of the expedition. I learned a lot about him. But history book also said Lieutenant Moss and the Bicycle Corps. And I didn't know anything about the Bicycle Corps. How come we didn't name the guys? Like, I wanted to know their names. I wanted to know where they were from, where they died. Did they have descendants? I wanted to know what they thought about, because I know what goes into my mind. And when I journal, right, can I find what they went through in their minds traveling by bicycle? All that stuff, Mason, like I just became fascinated. My wife says obsessed about this history. And I knew back then that I was going to retrace it. I just didn't know when. And I also knew that I needed to learn more about the history so I could tell the history through my medium, through my social channels, and pay homage and give those guys dignity. And back then, I just knew basic. And it took me 6 years, 7 years to learn about this history. And in 2020, I decided, a friend of mine was like, hey, what are you going to do in 2022? And he knows that I always take time to do a project. And I said, in 2022, I would love to travel around the 1897 expedition of the Bicycle Corps, because I'm ready now. I know every single guy by name. I know where they were born, where they died. I knew about the history of the route. I knew where they went. I mean, I just knew everything that I could possibly research. And in 1897, so in 2022, this year was 125 years anniversary from that route. And I was like, that's it. In 2022, I have to pay homage to these guys.
This 1900 mile route, like you said, in 1897, of an all-black corps of the military called the Buffalo Soldiers, the Bicycle Corps, went from Missoula, Montana, Fort Missoula, to St. Louis, Missouri. And it took them approximately 41 days. Tell us about like what it was like getting this together, lining up. It looked like other people started with you and following this route. I imagine a lot of it's still relatively rural, relatively undeveloped.
It was so important for me to start when they started. So they started June 14 of 1897. I started June 14 of 2022, but I started at 5:30 in the morning and they started at 5:30 in the morning. Now, they wanted to start at 5:30, but they didn't leave till 5:40, which is when I left as well. So
running a little late.
Yeah, no, I wanted to start where they started, the same at Fort Missoula, where they started, and they were stationed at 5:40 in the morning. Not a minute before, not a minute late. Again, when I do this trip, I go deep into the history of the actual expedition. And when I started doing the research, I first came across the map, the original map, then came across the journal of the Lieutenant Moss. And also they had a journalist. He was 19 years old, University of Montana student, and he was the journalist of the expedition. And I came across his journal as well. So literally I have day by day where they went, usually where they camped, what they ate. I have everything. And when I started this year, there was a group of people that from Missoula, because it's 125 year anniversary, they wanted to join. And they rode with me, local cyclists rode with me 5 miles from Fort Missoula to downtown Missoula. And then after that, I was on my own. But also, yeah, very rural. What they did is they traveled through a railroad. They followed the railroad line. This expedition for me was about 70% gravel, and then about 35% of it was paved. And yeah, it was beautiful because it's very rural, and some of the places that they went through, and some of the towns still exist. Some of the towns are not there anymore.
Compared to what they did, what were some of the things you were most looking forward to either seeing or experiencing that you had maybe learned about before starting?
Well, Fort Missoula, one, where they started, where they were stationed, and currently there's a museum there that has an exhibit about the bicycle course. So I was very excited to start where they started and they were stationed. To me, similar to the Underground Railroad experience where I stayed at Underground Railroad stations, I wanted to camp and I wanted to stay in military bases or military fort that they stayed. So my first experience in Helena, Montana, about 3-4 days from Missoula, Montana, they stayed Fort Harrison in Helena, Montana. That was the first experience where they stayed in Fort Harrison, and I wanted to stay there, but it's actually a fort, and I couldn't stay there because I'm not military. At first, for the past, right before I left, about 6 months, 7 months before I left, I kept calling them almost every week to see if I could stay there, and I wasn't successful. But when I went through Helena, just before I went to my campsite, I'm like, I'm gonna go to the museum in Fort Harrison, which I was able to go in. And right when I go in, Mason, there was a lady that kept waving at me from her office. And I'm like, waving back. She comes down and said, hey, aren't you the guy who's retracing the bicycle cord, the Buffalo Soldiers route? And I'm like, yeah, how did you know? And she said, I saw you on the news. And she said, well, how can I help you? I'm like, I would love to stay at this fort because those guys stayed here. And she said, well, I can make that happen. I'm the colonel of Fort Harrison. And I'm like, oh, how cool is that? Because for 7 months, like I mentioned, I wanted to stay there, and no one was able to approve that until I got there. And that's the beauty of traveling by bike. When I travel by bike, Mason, through history, I call out the names of the freedom seekers in the Underground Railroad. And on this one, retracing the Bicycle Corps expedition of the 1897, I will call out, while I'm riding my bike, will call out the names of the cyclists, of the Black cyclists, to tell me their story. I'm just like talking to them, right? So I'm like, hey, Private John Wilson, Private John Finley, Mingo Sanders, tell me what happened here. Like, I want to know the story. And these opportunities happen. And I always say it's probably because I'm connecting with them, because what are the chances out of this whole place? I just happened to go there, and this colonel happened to see the news that morning, and she saw me arriving. You know what I mean? Like, how that connections happen. And I know how it happens. It's this guy's telling me their stories. And I was able to stay there. That was a highlight of this expedition, because I really want to stay in places that they stayed. I want to eat where they ate. And happen again in Big Timber, Montana, where it was reported by the journalist that when they got to Big Timber, Montana, there was a civil war soldier waving at the Buffalo Soldiers that they came into town, and he waved them into the tavern, and he decided he wanted to buy a drink for everyone in the expedition. And I thought that was pretty cool, because I read there was some highlights and not so highlights. They experienced some like racism along the way, but they experienced some really cool people along the way, like this Civil War soldier who invited everyone to have a drink at this tavern. And I wanted to find that tavern. And with the help of some historians, we found the tavern, which is still there. It's called the Grand Hotel. The Grand Hotel has a tavern where it was built in 1890, and it was really cool to be able to go inside that tavern. And I spoke to the manager, I spoke to the bartender about the history of the bicycle corps that came through Big Timber, and they didn't know anything about it, but they were like, well, if they got a drink, you deserve a drink too. So I got a drink from them, and that was pretty cool as well to have that experience. And they took me to the basement of the Grand Hotel, where I got to see some of the history of that establishment. But yeah, so I also, when I went to Livingston, Montana, which I have a picture that I'm going to share with you after the podcast, where I was able to recreate one of the pictures. I have a lot of 1897 photos of that expedition. And I was like, I want to recreate at least one of those. And I want to go to exactly where they went to and recreate one of those photos. And I was able to do it in Livingston, Montana. So
let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. As you approach the finish of this expedition, watching one of the films made about it, one of the short films, there was quite a group of people gathered. Was that something you put together? And also, people just seemed very excited to be bringing this story to life. Tell us about maybe some of the feedback you got about showing, giving more light to something that has been forgotten by history.
Yes, so that's the power of social media, right? So once I put that I was doing this and I was celebrating the 125-year anniversary of the Bicycle Corps, I started getting different organizations that were working on their own to celebrate the accomplishment of the Bicycle Corps. So it happened in Missoula, Montana, where the locals were celebrating. They were stationed there. So Missoula, Destination Missoula, which is the travel and tourism bureau of Missoula, they had a celebration going also for Missoula with there's a museum there and an exhibition of the Bicycle Corps. They were doing their own celebration, right? So I was planning my route. And also I learned later that Missouri State Parks was putting a celebration to celebrate their arrival. Not only their arrival, but they wanted to celebrate. It took about 7 days for the Bicycle Corps to travel through Missouri, and Missouri State Park wanted to celebrate that day by day. So they actually were putting a celebration at some of the state parks where the Bicycle Corps stayed. So they were doing some storytelling along the way. So the power, when I said the power of social media, and also people are like, oh, you guys should connect with Eric Cedeno. And Eric Cedeno, you should connect with Missouri State Park. Eric Cedeno, you should connect with Destination Missoula. We all connected because we were doing kind of the same work, you see. And they also have an army band playing a song as I was arriving. They knew that I wanted to arrive when they arrived. So everything was organized like that. It was so great. It was so great. It was just magical, Mason, because if I would have done this 5 years ago, 3 years ago, or last year, I still would have been celebrated, but it would not have been the celebration that we had this year because there were so many organizations like Missouri State Park, like Destination Missoula, paying homage and celebrating the accomplishment on the 125-year anniversary of the 1897 expedition, you know.
For that expedition, do you feel like you accomplished what you set out to do?
Yeah, that's such an insightful question because I want to go back to when I arrived, because when those guys arrived, there was reported there was thousands and thousands of people. Some books and some accounts says over 10,000 people welcome the Bicycle Corps when they arrived to St. Louis. And that was pretty cool to be celebrated for those guys. I'm just so emotional when I think about that because of what they went through physically, emotionally, and along those routes, and to be celebrated as heroes, where the newspaper, the St. Louis newspaper, called it the greatest cycling achievement ever, right? Until this day, I think that quote is still, to me, is probably one of the greatest cycling achievements ever by cyclists. But to answer your question, yes, I prepare myself with research. And that's what I wanted to do this. I knew that I wanted to do this back in 2014. I knew I was going to retrace this route one day, but I wanted to pay homage to them, and I wanted to make sure that I told their story correctly. And I did that. I did that because on social media, what I was doing is I had day-by-day accounts of what happened in each place they arrived and what happened between towns. And I was able to do that from day one all the way up to day 41 on social media. So I wanted to tell their story. This is not my story. This is their story. I wanted to leave everything like on the table, right? Like I wanted to tell as much of the history that I know, I wanted to tell it. So I'm so glad that I have some sponsors as well that Hammerhead created a film called Truth and Dignity. And it's only a 7-minute, 8-minute film, but it told the story of why I was so interested in telling this story and telling their story, right? So yeah, I feel like I was able to accomplish what I wanted to on this expedition, but there's a lot of work that I'm doing. I think that retracing that route is only 15% of the work that I knew I wanted to do. The other work that I'm doing to give them dignity, I always say, I call this dignity and truth, because I wanted to give dignity to this man that was not given to them while they were alive. And I wanted to tell the actual truth that some of the books have not told because they're focused on the actual expedition. My focus is more on the Black soldiers, on the Black cyclists, that I call them the original bikepackers, because just to tell you that when I learned about who were those guys, I wanted to learn their personality. I wanted to learn again, like where they were born, were they married? Did they have kids? Where are they buried? For me, those guys are my heroes, and I want to celebrate them as that. So I learned all 20 of those guys' names. So now I have all 20 names, but what I don't have is the faces with the names, because it wasn't documented by the army who these guys were. Like I could tell you who the lieutenant, the white lieutenant, I could tell you who the white doctor, he's the military doctor, Dr. Kennedy. And I could tell you the journalist who's 19-year-old. And I'm so glad that they went, right? I give them all the credit because the lieutenant created this, and I give them credit. I give credit to the doctor. I give credit to the journalists because we have these photos and we have this account because of that. But how come I'm not able to tell the faces with the names? How come that wasn't important to document? To me, it is. Again, those are my heroes. So some of the work that I'm doing now is to put in names with the face. Now, the past 3 years, I've worked with historians. And we're able to recognize 8 of them by face and name. There's 12 more cyclists that we don't know who they are. Like I have names, but I can't put it with their faces. And it's very important for me to recognize all 20 of them. For 125 years, that hasn't been done. And I have a son, and when he grows old enough so I could tell him the history of who my heroes are, I want to be able to tell him face and name, who they are, right? And I want to tell them, like, he was born here, he died here. Another thing, talking about where they died and where they're buried, there's a there's a few of those guys that were buried without a grave marker. And about 2 years ago, we recognized that Private John Finley, which we were able to recognize by face and name, and also he's the mechanic of the expedition. We knew where he died, but we didn't know where he was buried. And we realized that it was because where he was buried, there was no grave marker. So 2 years ago, we were able to work with the VA. And finally, about 9 months ago, 10 months ago, we were able to put a new grave marker at Private John Finley. And now I'm working on a second soldier. His name is John Wilson. He's buried in Chicago. At least we believe that's where he is buried. And now we're working with the VA to also put a grave marker. So I wanted to retrace the history of the 1897 expedition, but I also want to be able to name each one of them by face and name, and also want to make sure that each of them are buried properly with a grave marker. So, yeah, I think I set out to do this project, and potentially this is now like a life work because there's so much work to do, you know, and I can't do it in a year or two. It's gonna be a while. And now I'm thinking of going back to Montana. They did three expeditions, Mason. They did in 1896, they did two expeditions, one from Missoula, Montana to Lake McDonald. It's about 125 miles, 150 miles each way. So 300 miles. And that was their first expedition. The second expedition, 1896, they went from Missoula, Montana to Yellowstone. And that's where you see some of those cool Yellowstone photos. That was their second expedition. And that was about 800 miles round trip. Literally, it's about 600 miles round trip, but they did 200 miles within Yellowstone. So it's about 800 miles completely on that expedition. And then the 1897, which is 1900 miles. I recently started thinking, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do all three expeditions. So I just did the 1897. Now I'm going back to do those two in 1896 back in Montana. So my first one is going to be in August. August 6th is actually when they went from Missoula, Montana to Lake McDonald, which is part of Glacier National Park. And Mason, you asked me like, why was so, now I remember, you asked me why it was so important for me to tell this story. And literally, this is a good way for me to end this conversation. Mason, it's so important for me to tell this story because when we started talking about traveling by bike, and I mentioned that I wish I would have known this when I was in high school and when I was in college, because I would have probably started traveling by bike then. This history of the Bicycle Corps, I would have been connected to as a person of color, and I would have started traveling. I didn't have an example. So it's so important for me to tell my son, other friends' sons, and other people to travel by bike. And that's why I thought it was so important to celebrate their history of the Bicycle Corps. But also, I saw that these were pioneers. We always celebrate in the U.S., we always celebrate pioneers. We always celebrate history of explorers and this and that, but how come they weren't celebrated? So for me, it's so important to celebrate them and to shine a light to a part of cycling history, U.S. history, and that's why I wanted to do it.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.